It's the appearance day of Gadadhar Pandit Goswami. So today we're going to speak about Gadadhar Pandit Goswami, if that's all right. So, in order to speak about Gadadhar Pandit Goswami, we're going to chant first, but I thought we'd chant the Gaura Aarti song, because the Gaura Aarti song mentions Gadadhar Pandit Goswami as well as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's other associates. So, because we don't have too many instruments here, we're going to chant without instruments. And you're all welcome to listen. Right? Instead of Jai Radha Madhava. Jaya, Jaya Gaura Chander Haroti Kishobha Janavitata Vande Jagamhanaloba Gorange Harotik Shoba Jagajanamanaloba Dakini Tai Chand Bame Gadadha Nikate Adwaita Srini Vasachatra Dara Vase Ache Gorachand Radna Singh Hasante Aroti Korena Brahma Odi Deva Gone Narahari Hari Kori Chamaradulaha Sanjaya Mukunda Vasu Goshahadi Goiha Shanka Bhaje Ganta Bhaje Bhaje Karatala Madhura Mirtanga Bhaje Parama Rasala Sanka Bhaje Ganta Bhaje Madhur 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 Bhaje Bahu Koti Chandra Jini Vadanahu Jwala Kala Deshe Vanamala Kore Jala Mala Kala Deshe Vanamora Kore Jala Mala Shiva Shukanaradaha Preme Gadda Gadha Wakati Vinoda Deke Guru Rashampada Kiba Jaya Jaya Gaura Chande Aroti Kishoba Janavitata Vande Jagamhanaloba. So, the reason I sang the Gaura Aarti song is today is the glorious appearance day of Gadadhar Pandit Goswami, and I will read the English translation of this wonderful song. All glorious song is written by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. All glories to the beautiful Aarti of Lord Gaurachandra on the forest banks of the Jhanavi, attracting the minds of all in the universe. The beautiful Aarti of Lord Gaurachandra, attracting the minds of all people in the universe. On his right is Lord Nityananda, and on his left, Sri Gadadhar, nearby is Sri Advaitacharya, and Sri Srivasa Thakur holds an umbrella. Lord Gaurachandra has seated himself on a jeweled singhasana, and Lord Brahma heads the demigods performing the aarti. Narahari Sarakara and various associates fan him with chamaras, while Sanjaya Pandit, Mukunda Datta, and Vasu Ghosh lead others in singing. Conch shells sound, bells sound, And so sound the cartels, the sweet mridanga sounds, ultimate ecstasy. Conch shell sound, bell sound, sweet, sweet, sweet sound. Many thousands of moons are defeated by his brilliant face, and the garland of forest flowers around his neck shines. Lord Shiva, Shukadev Goswami, and Narada Muni find their voices choked in ecstatic love. Thus Bhaktivinoda Thakur envisions the glories of the Golden Lord. So, that's the Gaura Artik song, just a little bit of introduction to Gadadhara Pandit Goswami's appearance day. So, Gadadhara Pandit Goswami is a member of the Panchatattva. Panchatattva means the five aspects of the Absolute Truth. And the five aspects of the Absolute Truth are Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is Krishna in the mood of Srimati Radharani. And then there is Lord Nityananda, Balaram Hoila Nittai, who is Balaram. And then there is there is Advaitacharya. Advaitacharya is considered to be an incarnation of the Mahavishnu and also Sadashiva. Then there is Gadadhar. Gadadhar is considered to be an incarnation or it's an expansion or direct appearance of Srimati Radharani. And then finally you have Srivas Thakur, who represents the Jiva soul, and generally it's understood he is Narada Muni, the great devotee who is always traveling and preaching Krishna consciousness. So, let's speak a little bit about Srivas Thakur. Of course, he is known to be Srimati Radharani's appearance in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. And just a little bit of ontological information, that Srivas Thakur had a little bit different mood than Srimati Radharani has. So Srimati Radharani is a left-handed gopi. Of course, she is the Adi Shakti, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the original potency from whom all other potencies expand. She's the Adi Shakti, but her mood is actually Vama. Vama means left-handed. And some of the gopis, their moods are Dakshina, which means right-handed. Now, that doesn't refer to someone who has the tendency to write with his left hand or write with his right hand. It refers to the submissive and unsubmissive mood. So Srimati Radharani sometimes gets very angry with Lord Krishna. And along with her associates, Lalita and Vishakha, they are sometimes prohibiting Krishna from coming in front of her. In fact, they're even threatening Krishna sometimes with sticks or other means. And Krishna has to make so many tricks in order to associate with Srimati Radharani. Some of those tricks are that he takes on the guise of a woman, or other tricks are that he takes on the guise of a doctor to cure snake bites. Anyway, there's so many stories told by, especially Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in this regard. But in any case, Gadadhara Pandit Goswami, in spite of being Srimati Radharani, or the appearance of Srimati Radharani in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes, he has this right-handed mood, which means submissive. And there's one interesting story that brings out this mood, I think, more than any other story that I've heard. And this is the story of Ballabha Bhatta that comes from the Chaitanya Charitamrita and also from the other literatures. So I'll tell this story. Once upon a time, there was this great scholar named Ballabha Bhatta. And this great scholar, as many scholars do, wanted to display his erudition in front of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he went to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he said to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I've written a commentary on the Srimad Bhagavatam. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, you know, I'm not so advanced, I don't understand Srimad Bhagavatam. Just to get rid of Balabhadra, because Balabhadra was actually quite proud of his erudition. And as we mentioned yesterday, these are different things that people get proud of. Janmaishvarya, Shutasya Shibir, Enamana Adapuman. Sometimes we are proud of our learning, sometimes we're proud of our birth, sometimes we're proud of our opulence, sometimes we're proud of our beauty, and there's so many things that we can be proud of. Queen Kunti prays in her famous prayers that one should not be proud of any of those things. And actually all those things come from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As Krishna says, you know, I am the intelligence of the intelligence, the strength of the strong, etc. like that. So everything comes from Krishna. So Krishna gives and he takes away. In fact, actually, one interesting thing about the prayers of Queen Kunti, sometimes you find certain people are chauvinistic. And it's interesting, Prabhupada basically published the prayers of a lady. You know, one may think that, oh, ladies can't be gurus, or ladies can't do this and ladies can't do that, but the one book of prayers that Prabhupada published were the prayers of Queen Kunti. However, that's a different subject matter. So, and another point, actually it's an interesting point, talking about women gurus. Hopefully I'm not getting off the subject right now, which I am, is that to refer to a guru in terms of their body is actually an offense. To refer to a Vaishnava in terms of their body, it's like saying, well, there's a black guru, there's a white guru, there's an Indian guru, there's an old guru, there's a young guru. So, Acharya mam viganiyam navamanyaita karichit namarcha buddhya suyigita sarvadeva mayo guru. Guru is guru. I mean, why do we think in terms of the body with a guru? Yeah, I want an old guru. I want a young guru. I want a pretty guru. I want an ugly guru. So anyways, it's also stupid. The whole argument is extremely stupid. But anyway, apart from that particular statement, which probably offended a lot of Vaishnavas, let's get on with the story. So Balabhadra, being very proud, said to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, oh, since you're into chanting the holy names, I've written a commentary on the holy names. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, well, all I know is Krishna is in his holy names. He's Shyamashundara, etc., like that. I don't know anything else. And so he refused to hear any of Balabhadra's commentaries or statements or interpretations or anything like that. So Balabhadra had a friend, and his friend was named Gadadhar Pandit Goswami. And so he went to Gadadhar Pandit Goswami and said, I want you to hear my commentary on the Srimad Bhagavatam. And so Gadadhar Pandit Goswami was thinking, this is really bad. I mean, I don't want to hear his commentary on the Srimad Bhagavatam. I'm not interested in that. I am interested in pleasing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And so he was thinking, I don't want to hear this. So Balabhadra kept insisting. Finally, you know, oh my God, I'm trapped. I have to hear this commentary. So he listened to the commentary and he was praying to Lord Chaitanya, please forgive me. He understood Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would understand what he was thinking about and he wouldn't criticize him, but he understood also that some of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's devotees would criticize him for listening to Balabhadra. So he did that, and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually neglected him externally. It appeared that Lord Chaitanya was neglecting him and not talking to him that much because he was associating with Balabhadra. And he didn't say anything to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I mean, generally, if someone's neglecting us, we'll say something to them. I mean, that's natural. But he was just like so submissive, he didn't say anything. Finally, Balabhadra went to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and said to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I've written a commentary on the Srimad Bhagavatam, and in this commentary, I've refuted the commentary of Sridhar Swami. For those of you who don't know, Sridhar Swami is the original commentator on the Srimad Bhagavatam, and Prabhupada actually consulted his commentary along with the commentaries of Jiva Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, and other great saints when Prabhupada was writing his commentaries. So, then Lord Chaitanya responded to Balabhadra. He said, someone who does not accept the Swami, he's a prostitute. So, that's actually a play on words. Like, Swami can mean also sannyasi, it can mean someone's husband. Like, traditionally in India, the husband was called Swami, not because the husband was a sannyasi, but because the husband was, I better not say, the master. Oh my God, that's definitely not a politically correct statement. Oh, I apologize for it. Anyway, the husband was considered, oh my God. I better edit this later on. So anyway, the husband was considered a master, not the master in the sense of someone who just like is a slave driver. But, you know, there's a cooperation like that, and women by nature have a devotional mood. That's the advantage of being in a female body, that the women like to serve. The men, on the other hand, they like to be the boss. That's the disadvantage of being in a male body. You just like to be a boss. And Prabhupada commented that generally in any religious ceremony, regardless of which religion it is, there's 2 to 3 times as many women at that religious ceremony because the women are more devotional. They're from the heart. Whereas the men, they're from the brain or from the muscle or something like that. Sometimes we say muscle head. So there's advantages. There's advantages. So anyway, so because the man, he has this false ego, he's called Swami. Anyway, getting back to the point. So Lord Chaitanya said, someone who does not accept the Swami, referring to husband at this particular point, is a prostitute. And Balabhadra became so shocked when he heard this, he just went away and he thought, you know, why is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu dealing with me in this particular way? And so eventually, he went to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and apologized and everything like that. And he made up with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted him, not as a disciple. And Balabhadra wanted to accept initiation from Gadadhar Pandit Goswami. And Gadadhar Pandit Goswami refused to give him initiation. So I can't do anything unless Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu approves. So eventually Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu approved that Balabhadra would take initiation from Gadadhar Pandit Goswami. And therefore we have the Balabhacharya Sampradaya, Nimbarka Sampradaya. And he was initiated. They're actually part of our Sampradaya because he was initiated by Gadadhar Pandit Goswami. Although those who follow this path that's called Pushti Marg generally do not admit that Balabhacharya was initiated by Gadadhar Pandit Goswami, although we have direct information from Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami and other biographers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So they are followers, ultimately, of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Later on, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu called for Gadadhar Pandit Goswami, and he said to Gadadhar Pandit Goswami, why did you not reproach me? Reproaching means, you know, what's happening in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Why didn't you ask me what's happening? And Gadadhar Pandit Goswami was so submissive in relationship to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that he said, you know, I just didn't want to say anything to you. I didn't want to talk back to you. What's the problem with the sound? Can you hear? Can everyone hear me?
It's a bit low, Gurudev.
Oh, it's still low. All right. How about now?
That's better.
Okay, I just need to make the microphone a little closer to my mouth. So, anyway, just turn up your volume if you can't hear it properly. So we'll solve the microphone problem tomorrow. So Gadadhar Pandit Goswami said that basically I didn't want to talk back to you. So he had this super submissive mood in relationship to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is quite interesting because Srimati Radharani did not have that super submissive mood in relationship to Lord Sri Krishna. She definitely talked back to him and definitely got angry with him. So what can we understand from this? Well, we understand that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he had Radharani's mood too. And having Radharani's mood, the Acharyas describe that he sort of like took on her bhav. That means her emotion of anger and unsubmissiveness, etc., like that. So then he took that from... Anyway, it's a little ontological, a little esoteric here. He took that from Gadadhar Pandit Goswami. So that Gadadhar Pandit Goswami had a submissive mood, a mood that was similar to that of Rukmini Devi. Now, I think you've all read Krishna book. Hopefully, you've all read Krishna book. And in Krishna book, you have Rukmini Devi tested by Sri Krishna. How is she tested by Sri Krishna? Well, after she and Sri Krishna had, or Dwarkadish in this particular case, had been married for many, 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 many years, and she had grandchildren, Krishna said to her that, actually, I'm not a fit husband for you. You should have married Shishupal. That would have been much better for you. And so you could still go ahead and find another husband. I mean, actually, in the Vedic culture, that would be considered, like, horrendous. In modern culture, modern America, you know, people trade in husbands and trade in wives. It's very easy. It's like trading in a car, trading in a computer, changing your house. Just like in America, it's interesting that at least before this whole crisis occurred, the people would regularly move, sell houses, buy new houses, like that. So, of course, it's pretty good for a sannyasi, but it's not good for a householder. So this whole idea that was presented by Sri Krishna was actually, in one sense, crazy. So Srimati Rukmini Devi, she didn't respond by saying to Krishna, it's crazy. She responded by fainting. And Krishna had to manifest two extra arms. In other words, he had four arms at this point, as Dwarkadish, to catch her. And then she was able to speak in such a way after that to show how that everything Krishna said was true from a different angle of vision, at least not the accepting another husband, but Krishna denigrating himself. When Krishna said, for example, that nobody knows what caste I am, which is actually true. Nobody knows what caste the Supreme Personality of God it is. So in this way, she acted very, very submissively towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Gadadhar Pandit Goswami had this particular mood. Now, you contrast that. You contrast that with the mood of Jagadananda Pandit. Jagadananda Pandit, of course, is in the mood of Satyabhama, who is considered to be in the Dwarka pastimes. He's considered to be, an incarnation of Satyabhama. Of course, Satyabhama has an unsubmissive mood towards Krishna. For example, when Krishna got for Rukmini the Parijata flower, Satyabhama was so upset that she nagged Krishna to get her not only a Parijata flower, but to get her a whole tree. And eventually, Krishna, being nagged by Satyabhama, had to get a whole tree of the Parijata flowers. And when he got that whole tree of the Parijata flowers, guess what happened? He had to fight with all the demigods, defeat all the demigods in order to get the Parijata tree, just because he was nagged by his wife. So this is the mood of Satyabhama and the mood of Jagadananda Pandit. I mean, there's one story in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that illustrates this. Actually, quite a few stories. One time, Jagadananda Pandit got some sandalwood oil for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he brought it all the way there to please Chaitanya Mahaprabhu so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu could get massaged with the sandalwood oil. And so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said to Jagadananda Pandit that, "What do you think I am? If I use this sandalwood oil, people will think I'm a Dari sannyasi." A Dari sannyasi is a so-called sannyasi who keeps ladies for his own pleasure. And this is very nasty. So he refused to accept this sandalwood oil. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "Give this sandalwood oil to the deities." And Jagadananda Pandit, being very angry with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, picked up the jar, I guess it was a clay jar, of sandalwood oil and smashed it on the ground and said, "Who told you I brought sandalwood oil?" And so this is like extreme anger manifest in the mood of Satyabhama, and Satyabhama is considered to be an expansion of Srimati Radharani in the bomb or the left-handed mood in a relationship to Krishna. So, Gadadhar Pandit, getting back to Gadadhar Pandit, he had this right-handed mood in relationship to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So it's very important to understand his mood. Now, let's talk a little bit about his childhood. He was actually about 1 year younger than Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he was the childhood friend of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to school, first started studying, he became very expert in rhetoric and argumentation. And because he had not taken initiation at that particular time, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not exhibit the qualities of being a devotee. In fact, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sometimes would attack the devotees and challenge them to philosophical debates. And so the devotees would many times avoid the presence of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In fact, sometimes the devotees would pray to Lord Krishna that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is such an expert, or of course they called him Nimai, sorry, at that time, that he is such an expert intellectual. Excuse me. He's such an expert intellectual that we pray that he'll be a devotee, and if he becomes a devotee, he'll be such an expert preacher of Krishna consciousness. So they would pray like that. In fact, one time Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Gadadhar Pandit Goswami, he said, "Gadadhar, by your prayers I'll become a devotee, and I shall become such a great Vaishnava that even Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva will offer obeisances to me." Of course, Gadadhar thought this is pretty ridiculous, that that actually this person who's so puffed up is thinking that Brahma and Shiva will offer obeisances to him. absolutely ridiculous. Of course, little did he realize later on, when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took initiation from Ishwarapuri, that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was showing us the importance of taking initiation from a bona fide spiritual master, because before taking initiation or before getting the association of a pure devotee, no one can actually understand Krishna consciousness. The association is absolutely essential, because the pure devotee carries bhakti in his heart. There's a statement by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur that bhakti is not actually given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Bhakti is given by Krishna's devotee. Bhakti is independent. So Krishna doesn't give bhakti. Krishna se tumar, Krishna dite par, as the statement goes. Krishna is yours, you have the power to give him. I'm simply running behind you, shouting, Krishna, Krishna. And of course, I do experience this right before I gave the class. I was listening to a class given by Srila Prabhupada. And even though it was a subject matter that I've heard many, many, many times before, just the sound vibration coming from the lotus mouth of His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada was enough to enliven me. Even though I knew what Prabhupada was going to say, I've heard every one of his classes before, but because Srila Prabhupada's sound vibration has within it the dust particles of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What that means exactly, the dust particles, it means the association with our entire Sampradaya, with all these great devotees. We have this disciplic succession coming down, of course, from Lord Brahma, Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. And so by associating with Srila Prabhupada, we get the association with all these great devotees. It's the sound vibration. Bhavanti Ritkarna Rasayana Kataja Joshinadashu Apavarga Vartmani Shraddha Ratayar Bhakti Anukramishati. This is actually a statement by Lord Kapiladev about how we become Krishna conscious. He says, Satam Prasangan Mama Virya Samvaro Bhavanti Ritkarna Rasayana Kata to Jochanadashu Apavarga Vartmani Shraddha Ratir Bhakti Anukramishati. He says, when we hear from the pure devotees, Satam. Satam means the pure devotees. Prasangam, we take their association. And we hear about Mamavirya Samvada, the talks about Krishna's heroic activities or Krishna's philosophy. Bhavanti Vritkarna, from the ear to the heart, something gets injected. And then something that gets injected is Rasayana Katha, the talks about Krishna that are Rasayana, that actually, like Vedic medicine or Ayurvedic medicine, a Rasayana that actually cures the disease. Rasayana Katha to Joshanadashu, in this way one gets liberated, Apavarga Vartmani. And then Shraddha Ratiravakti Anukramishati, then gradually or very quickly you proceed on the path of rati, shraddha, faith, taste, and eventually bhakti, anukramishati. They follow one after that. So this is the secret in devotional service. So getting back to Gadadharpana Goswami, so Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not exhibit his devotional qualities until he took initiation, showing us the importance of approaching a spiritual master. So, after Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took initiation from Ishwarapuri, then Lord Chaitanya called for Gadadhar Pandit Goswami, and Gadadhar Pandit Goswami always remained at the side of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu after that time. There's also an interesting story. We're telling several stories here. There's an interesting story of how Gadadhar Pandit Goswami took initiation from his guru Pundarik Vijayaniti. So Pundarik Vijayaniti was basically the appearance or manifestation of Vrishabhanu. Vrishabhanu is, of course, Radharani's father. Radharani is sometimes called Vrishabhanu Nandini. Vrishabhanandini means the daughter of Vrishabhanu. So Vrishabhanu in Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes appeared as Pundarik Vijayaniti. So one time Pundarik Vijayaniti was visiting Navadweep. And just go back a little bit. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also considered Pundarik Vijayaniti to be his father. It's interesting. All the time when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was referring to Pundarik Vijayaniti, he would say, father, father, father. Because Pundarik Vijayaniti was the father of Srimati Radharani. So, getting back to the point, so Pundarik Vijayaniti was visiting Navadvip Dham. And when he was visiting Navadvip Dham, he was speaking about Krishna. But the interesting thing about Pundarik Vijayaniti, he came from a very wealthy family. Generally, when you see Vaishnavas, Vaishnavas are generally not that wealthy, although there are some exceptions. But generally, they're very austere. For example, if you came into my house and saw me sitting on a four-poster bed, chewing on betel nut, and had long hair, which I can't grow anymore. If you saw me like that, you'd think, oh my God, he is not bona fide. Can you imagine that, you know, being served in so many ways? So basically, Pundarik Vijayaniti was living like that. And he had long hair and was covered with oil. I guess sandalwood oil or something like that. And he was chewing betel nut, and he was sitting on a four-poster bed with opulent sheets and silk sheets and everything like that. And so Gadadhar Pandit was brought to see him by his friend Mukunda Dutt, who was a famous singer in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. So Mukunda Dutt brought him, he said, here is a great Vaishnava. When Gadadhar Pandit Goswami saw Pundarik Vijayaniti, he thought, this is not a Vaishnava, this is just a materialist. So Mukunda Dutt understood Gadadhar Pandit Goswami's mood, and he said, he was thinking, I need to show Gadadhar who Pundarik really is. So he began to sing part of the Srimad Bhagavatam about Lord Sri Krishna's mercy. And when he began to sing like that, Pundarik Vijayaniti went into such a swoon. Yesterday we were talking about bhavas, and this is called a Vyabhachari bhava or Sanchari bhava. He went into such a swoon that he basically tore apart his whole bed and went unconscious. And Gadadhar Pandit thought, oh my God, I've committed a great offense. Because when one commits an offense against a Vaishnava, one loses the taste for hearing and chanting. Very, very important. One of the qualities of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's devotees is that they are adverse to fault-finding. They cannot tolerate fault-finding. If anyone starts to criticize, then they just go away from the situation. So we should be like that too. Yesterday, of course, we were talking about, the question was raised in class, what do you do when someone is criticizing on the internet and whatever it is like that? And I said, you don't participate in those discussions. You know, people think they're going to make other people Krishna conscious or get some sadhu sangha by doing it with these internet discussions with large groups of people. But these internet discussions usually devolve to the point of ad hominem attacks or critical criticism of Vaishnavas. So we have to be very, very careful about it. We should avoid this like the plague if we want to understand Krishna consciousness. So Gadadhar Pandit, thinking like this, oh my God, I've criticized in my mind. That's interesting. In his mind, he was feeling that he had some criticism, and he was feeling remorseful because of that. So not only, it was not a verbal criticism, it was not a corporal act, that means a physical act, but it was a mental, I wouldn't say act, but a mental proclivity. And so he felt so guilty, and he felt, wow, the only way I can mitigate this offense or get rid of the offense is to take initiation from Pundarik Vijayaniti. So he said that when Pundarik Vijayaniti came back to external consciousness, oh, can I take initiation from you? And Pundarik Vijayaniti asked Mukunda, who is this person? And Mukunda Dutt said, so-and-so, he's very qualified. And then Pundarik Vijayaniti said, only after many, many lifetimes does someone get such a disciple as Gadadhar Pandit. So he initiated Gadadhar Pandit, and that's how Gadadhar Pandit took initiation. And very wonderful story. So in the Navadvip pastimes, Gadadhar Pandit was always with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In fact, sometimes he even protected Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who was known as Nimaya at that time. One time, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was exhibiting the mood of extreme separation, vipralamba, and he was crying out, where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? And Gadadhar Pandit said to him, Krishna is in your heart. And so Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began to do something that, in the case of Hanuman, was actually appropriate, because Hanuman, he opened up his chest and he showed Sita, Ram, and Lakshman in his heart. But Lord Chaitanya began to tear with his nails at his chest and actually started to, like, injure himself. So Gadadhar Pandit grabbed his hands and stopped him. And then when Sachimata saw that, Sachimata, the mother of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sachimata said, this Gadadhar, he's very intelligent. He should always stay with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He should never neglect Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then finally, when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we're not going to get a chance to tell everything about Gadadhar Pandit, because it's almost time to greet the deities, but I guess we'll keep on going since we got people online from other places. So when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to Jagannath Puri, Gadadhar Pandit, of course, followed him. And in Jagannath Puri, Gadadhar Pandit Goswami took the vow of what's called Kshetra Sannyas. Kshetra Sannyas means where one stays in a holy place, and in certain cases, one may stay with one's family, but of course, Gadadhar Pandit didn't have a family, and serves the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his deity form. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur comments that this Kshetra Sannyas is the preferable type of sannyas that people should be taking in Kali Yuga. In other words, the general type of sannyas that we normally think of is not really recommended in Kali Yuga, although it can be accepted in certain cases for the preaching of Krishna consciousness. You know, it's a utility as the principle. For example, our type of sannyas that we have in our Krishna consciousness movement is not actually the traditional sannyas that you find in the Gaudiya Sampradaya, in the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. The traditional sannyas that you find in the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya is more or less like the Babaji order, where someone wears a gumsho, or what we call a lungi, and doesn't have any top piece, and certainly there's no danda, and you shave off sika in the back of your head, you take off your Brahmin thread, all the signs of your social status. The Brahmin thread is actually a sign of a social status. So you get rid of all the signs of your social status. That's our traditional form of sannyas, and that's the sannyas that the Goswamis of Vrindavan accepted. However, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he instituted the type of sannyas that we take in ISKCON for the purpose of preaching. In fact, he examined the sannyasis or the type of sannyas in South India in the Sri Sampradaya, and also we examined what the Ramakrishna Mission was doing. Of course, the Ramakrishna Mission is a completely bogus organization, but he wanted to imitate their strategy. So in the same way, in the Krishna Conscious Movement, we can look at different strategies that different organizations or different companies use and use them to spread Krishna consciousness. That's called Yukta Vairagya. So, and that's the type of sannyas that we have, is based on what's effective for preaching. So Prabhupada was very much into results, whatever is most effective. And that's why Prabhupada ultimately even allowed devotees to wear wigs on. Or even took so many risks in preaching Krishna consciousness. Even at one time he arranged for meat to be fed to some Britishers who were coming to Mayapur so they would feel comfortable, so he could introduce them to Krishna consciousness. So we have to be very careful about imposing different cultural items that we think are integral to Krishna consciousness, but may not be integral to Krishna consciousness, may be just like details of trying to impose them on people, thinking that this is essential for them to take up Krishna consciousness. So we have to understand the essentials and non-essentials. So Gadadhar Pandit Goswami, getting back to the story, took Kshetra sannyas, preferable type of sannyas in Kali Yuga, remained serving the deity. Of course, his deity was the Tota Gopinath deity. And he was so dedicated to this Tota Gopinath deity that when he became too old to actually stand up to address the deities, and because the deities were quite large, the deity actually sat down to allow him to take care of him, which is quite unique. Anyone who's gone to that temple, the temple of Tota Gopinath in Jagannath Puri, have seen this beautiful deity of Krishna, a very, very big deity of Krishna, sitting down. It's one of the few deities of Krishna, playing a flute, sitting down. So, Gadadhar Pandit Goswami took that vow. Now, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was also there in Jagannath Puri, and Gadadhar Pandit also wanted to remain always with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, one time, and this happened several times, but one time that's written about in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to go to Vrindavan, and he was going to Vrindavan. He didn't want to take all the devotees with him. It's an interesting story about this. Let's go back a little bit. That one time Lord Chaitanya previously was going to Vrindavan, and a whole group of devotees was following him to Vrindavan. And Rupa and Sanatana Goswami, at that time, they were known as Dabirukas and Shakara Malik, who met Lord Chaitanya on the way to Vrindavan in the town of Ramakeli, told him it wasn't appropriate to go like that with such a large group of people. And then Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu agreed with that, and then he went back to Jagannath Puri. So eventually, when he did go to Vrindavan, he told Gadadhar Pandit Goswami, "You stay here." But Gadadhar Pandit Goswami followed Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to the outskirts of Jagannath Puri, and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "You have actually violated your vow of Kshetra Sannyas to stay in a holy place to serve the deities." And Gadadhar Pandit Goswami, having so much devotion for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, said, basically, "Let my vow go to hell." So sometimes out of love, one can break, and we're not talking about lust here in the material world. Out of love for the Lord, one can do things that basically would not be considered dharmic, such as breaking one's vow. So out of love for the Lord, he left, and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu eventually ordered him to go back. And the interesting thing is Gadadhar Pandit Goswami never went to Vrindavan for his whole, I wouldn't want to say life, his whole pastimes, the whole manifestation on this earth. He never went to Vrindavan. Lord Chaitanya would never let him go to Vrindavan. That's interesting. And, of course, one of the reasons is, you know, esoterically, that Gadadhar Pandit Goswami would be feeling so much separation, it would be too intense for him. Of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he went to Vrindavan, he also felt this intense mood of separation from Krishna. So let's talk about the final pastimes of Gadadhar Pandit. Final pastimes were quite interesting. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left this world, entering into the deity of Tota Gopinath, which was Gadadhar Pandit Goswami's deity. And Gadadhar Pandit Goswami, after this, left in the same way by going into the deity room and disappearing. So in this way, both of them left this world, and you can see the intimate connection between Gadadhar Pandit Goswami and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, of course, there's many other stories we can tell about Gadadhar Pandit Goswami, but right now it's 7:22 a.m. Does anyone have any questions about Gadadhar Pandit Goswami? Questions? If you do, you can take yourself off of mute and ask a question.
Gurudev.
Chandra, okay.
Do Vaishnavas, we observe the fasting for Gadadhar Pandit?
Generally, I have not heard of fasting on Gadadhar Pandit Goswami's appearance day. Oh, the interesting thing, actually, there's one other interesting thing now that you mention this, because when you mentioned his appearance day, I thought of his disappearance day. So his disappearance day is the same day as Bhaktivinoda Thakur's disappearance. And so Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur commented in this regard that he considered Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur to be a manifestation or incarnation of Gadadhar Pandit Goswami. This is quite esoteric. And he considered, this is another esoteric thing. In a mood of ecstasy, he made these statements. He considered that Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj was an incarnation or a manifestation or empowered representative of Swarup Damodar Goswami. So he said that Swarup Damodar Goswami and Gadadhar Pandit have appeared as Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj and as Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Pretty amazing, isn't it? You think about that. This is, anyway, it's a statement of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, which we accept 100% since we are his shishas or followers. So anyway, so as far as fasting, I've never heard Prabhupada say that we should fast on this day. And I guess you'd have to consult some other Gaudiya Mouse to figure that out. But Prabhupada never had us fasting on this day. So, any other questions or comments? Krishna Chandra, you have more. Whoops. Anyone else want to ask a question? Oh, Chaitanya Vallabha, I haven't seen you in a long time.
Hare Krishna Gurudev, please accept my humble obeisance, Gurudev.
Good to see you.
Gurudev. Gurudev, I have one question, Gurudev.
Yeah, go ahead.
Gurudev, like, you know, in Vrindavan also I heard devotees say like that, like Gadadhar Pandit sometimes acted like Satyabhama in Dwaraka, in that mood.
Yeah.
But we say she is the appearance of Radharani in the pastime of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So how to understand this one, Gurudev?
Yeah, I guess you just joined us recently because I actually had explained that. That it's described by the Acharyas, and I said, this is very esoteric. Don't ask me to explain it in more detail. That Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stole the bhava of Radharani. You know, because he was in that bhava or mood He stole it. Don't ask me how he did it. This is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and I'm just an insignificant jiva. But this is what the acharyas say, that he took on the bhava of Srimati Radharani. It actually wouldn't have been appropriate for him to have that bhava and for Gadadhar Pandit Goswami to have that bhava. That would have been extremely inappropriate. You know, two people, you know, you just think about it. Lord Chaitanya is Krishna in the mood of Radharani, in the left-handed Vam mood, unsubmissive mood. And then you have Radharani, who's Gadadhar Pandit Goswami, in the unsubmissive mood. It just wouldn't have worked. It wouldn't have worked. I mean, just from a practical or even a theatrical point of view, it's just not going to work. If you had Gadadhar Pandit Goswami in the mood of Jagadananda Pandit. If any of you are interested in understanding the mood of Jagadananda Pandit, you can read this very beautiful book called Prema Vivarta. Actually, Vivarta means illusion, which is interesting. So it's the illusion of Prema. Because when one is absorbed in Prema, Krishna Prema, one becomes Divyonmada. One experiences transcendental madness. So Jagadananda Pandit's, let's say, unsubmissive attitude towards Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was a manifestation of love. In fact, I mean, one thing I didn't mention about Jagadananda Pandit is when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu rejected the sandalwood pulp, then Jagadananda Pandit not only smashed the sandalwood oil, not only smashed the sandalwood oil, but Jagadananda Pandit, after that, he locked himself in a room for 3 or 4 days without eating, like completely, I guess, depressed, morose, throwing a fit. Now, that's a real fit. I don't know if you've ever seen anybody throw a fit, like a child. Anyone seen a child? Sometimes they throw a fit and they just like, So Jagadananda Pandit actually acted like that in a way that we would consider to be extremely immature. You know, if you see an adult do that throw a fit, it's, just, what are you acting like a baby for? But this is the madness of ecstatic love. So that was Jagadananda Pandit's mood, which is in the mood of Satyabhama and the mood of Srimati Radharani. Whereas Gadadhar Pandit Goswami was in the mood of Rukmini, completely submissive, never talking back, never envisioning talking back to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He just like wouldn't say anything. That's why Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had to call him over and say, why didn't you reproach me? Why didn't you chastise me? And Jagadananda Pandit, he wouldn't. He was submissive because Lord Chaitanya had that mood. And that's how the acharyas explain it. And I'm just reciting the acharya's explanation. So, any other questions or comments that people would like to make? The devotee.
Hare Krishna, Gurudev.
Yes, Nalini Kant from New Zealand. And it's past your bedtime. And hopefully you'll wake up tomorrow morning.
Yes, so, Gurudev. Okay. By your blessing.
By my blessing. By my blessing, you'll sleep late. So, go ahead.
Gurudev. Ramananda Roy and Swarup Damodar Goswami also, their expansions of Lalita Sakhi and Vishakha Sati, I heard in one of the lectures.
Yes, that's true. Ramananda Roy is Vishakha and Swarup Damodar Goswami is Lalita. And they were always with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So when Bhakti Siddhanta Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur mentioned about Gadadhar Pandit Goswami appearing as Bhaktivinoda Thakur, it's not clear whether he was empowered by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, by Gadadhar Pandit Goswami, or he was directly Gadadhar Pandit Goswami. But my general understanding, you know, is that he was empowered by Gadadhar Pandit Goswami. Although there's an interesting indication because they both disappeared on the same day. Different years, of course, but on the same day.
You're talking
Very
about
interesting.
Akhila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and
Yeah.
Gadadhar Pandit.
No, Bhakti, not, no, Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Gadadhar
Okay.
Pandit.
Okay.
Bhaktivinoda Thakur and
Okay.
Gadadhar Pandit. Not Bhaktisiddhanta, but Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur made that declaration in an ecstatic mood. He says, Gadadhar Pandit Goswami has now appeared as Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and Swarup Damodar Goswami has appeared as Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj. So, how to take that, it would simply be our speculation at this particular point. You know, whether it's empowered or directly the person. Okay, Jayananda, I see you raising your hand.
Thank
Jayananda,
you,
why don't
Gurudev.
you speak?
Yes, Gurudev. I was wondering about you mentioned that devotion is received from devotees.
Yeah.
On the other hand, there's this verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita that devotion is eternally the quality
Of
of
the
the
soul.
soul. Yes. And Gaudiya Vaishnavism even seems to be a little bit divided about this issue, whether it's about reviving what is already there, or whether it's given and it's not already there.
Well, it's the constitutional position of the soul. Jivera Swarupahoy Nitya Krishna Das. I mean, what? I don't think it's, in my mind, it's not a controversial point. I guess in some people's mind is, isn't it?
Yes.
You know, and in Chaitanya Charitamrita is very clear. It's eternally part of the soul. I mean, the devotion to Krishna is eternally the nature of the soul. It's not that it comes about, that eternal nature becomes manifest by coming in contact. I mean, comes manifest. Not the eternal nature actually comes into existence by coming in contact with a pure devotee, but it becomes manifest. Just like, all right, here's an example for you, and I'm not sure if it's from the Shastras. Let's say you have let's say you have a plant that's in the ground or a seed that's in the ground, and it's dry. But when you throw water or put water on it, it starts to grow. Of course, I know the example is Brahmanda Brahmate Kondava Bhagavan Jiva Guru Krishna Prasadi Vaya Bhakti Lata Peach. That
Yes.
says the pure devotee implants the seed of devotion. But that's just a metaphor.
Okay.
My understanding is that the pure devotee awakens, the association of the pure devotee awakens what's already there in the heart. And that's actually what Srila Prabhupada taught.
Yes.
That it's in the heart and it awakens it. Otherwise, if we say it's something separate from our constitution, that our constitution is not, then you know, you're actually saying indirectly your constitution is not to serve Krishna, is not to love Krishna. But the pure devotee changes your constitution. I mean, that's really, I think, philosophically wrong to say that the pure devotee changes your constitution. Your constitution is already there. He just engages your constitution, and that way, he awakens your bhakti. There's also bhakti shakti too. The shakti of bhakti, you know, the energy of bhakti that comes from a pure devotee. So anyway, it's a philosophical point, but my understanding from reading the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Nitya Siddha Krishna Prem, that it's eternally there in the heart, Krishna Prem, it just needs to be awakened. And when I hear of Prabhupada, then it becomes awakened. When I listen to Prabhupada, I become very much enlivened and awakened, and I feel like dancing and chanting. Even when I hear Prabhupada say something very simple, like, you're not the body. I mean, we've heard you're not the body a million and one times, but if I hear Prabhupada say it, Prabhupada's words or Prabhupada chanting some Vaishnava song, it just enlivens my heart. So, any other questions?
I have a question.
Yes, Prema.
You were mentioning that verse which describes association with devotees and how by hearing the devotees one can progress from Shraddha to Prema.
Yeah.
To different stages. So my question is, what if a devotee is actually not practicing Uttama Bhakti, but it's practicing Mishra Bhakti? How is then his progress? Does such a devotee also go
right,
to these stages?
Let me explain to everybody what Mishra Bhakti means. Mishra means it's mixed. Basically, Mishra, mixed, is the same thing. So there's Karma Mishra Bhakti and Jnana Mishra Bhakti. So Karma Mishra Bhakti means that your bhakti is mixed with some desire to enjoy something of this world. In other words, like you have, many people do this, what, Satyanarayan Katha or something like that, where they do some performance and beg Krishna for something in the material world. Actually, Prabhupada compared that to the lady in the forest who dropped her firewood. She was carrying it on her head. She dropped the firewood, and she started praying to Krishna, and Krishna appeared, and Krishna asked, "What do you want, my dear devotee?" And she said, "Take the firewood and put it back on my head." That's Karma Mishra Bhakti. So Jnana Mishra Bhakti means we want to get liberated from the material world. Both are not necessarily bad. Because as Krishna states in the Gita, was it Chaturvidam Bhajanti Mam, that four types of people approach him. People want wealth. That's Karma Mishra Bhakti. People who are in distress, you know, want liberation. That's Jnana Mishra Bhakti. People who are inquisitive. People who want knowledge. So these desires are not necessarily bad in the beginning. So the question is, can one progress from these stages of Karma Mishra Bhakti or Jnana Mishra Bhakti or whatever? And the question is yes. By the association with a pure devotee, then one can progress quite quickly. Just like Dhruva. Dhruva was engaged in Karma Mishra Bhakti, right? I think you know Dhruva Maharaj. Karma Mishra Bhakti means that he was engaged in asking something from Krishna, and he wanted a kingdom greater than that of Lord Brahma, basically. You can't get, let's say, more intense in Karma Mishra Bhakti than wanting such a kingdom as greater than Lord Brahma. And then when he saw Krishna, then he said, you know, I was looking for some pieces of broken glass, but I found a beautiful gem. And that was because he associated with Narada Muni. My own experience in Krishna consciousness is that I joined the Krishna consciousness movement for two basic reasons. Not because of the prasadam. Although Prabhupada, I was listening to Prabhupada yesterday. He said everybody joined because of the prasadam. But, you know, Prabhupada was joking. I joined because I wanted knowledge and I wanted liberation. And one of the things that happened when I first joined the movement is that I prayed to Krishna every night that he would kill me and take me back to Godhead to get me out of this miserable material world. I wasn't so miserable. I guess the Brahmacharya ashram was pretty miserable, living in the same room with 30 other men, sharing the same clothes. I mean, it's enough to make you want to get liberated from the material world. Isn't it? I mean, it's 30 other people sharing the same clothes. You couldn't even roll over at night without hitting someone. I mean, please, Krishna, take me out of this miserable material world. Anyway, so I was praying to Krishna like every night, you know, please kill me and take me back to Godhead. But fortunately, Krishna never killed me so far and didn't take me back to Godhead. And eventually, that desire went away. And then now I can say honestly, you know, I don't have the desire of Krishna to kill me, take me back to Godhead. I'm thinking more like, Krishna, let me engage in Prabhupada's service life after life. You know, that's, at least that's my main concentration. Please let me engage in Prabhupada's service. As long as I have an internet connection, then I'm happy. I'm sorry about that. A fast internet connection. No, not really. So, you know, so it changed. Does that make sense? Because nobody comes to Krishna consciousness with a pure desire unless you're already a pure devotee, and then you don't come to Krishna consciousness. You're already Krishna conscious. I mean, who has come to Krishna consciousness with a pure desire? I mean, none of us. I mean, maybe some of you. But, you know, Krishna saves us. Right? Otherwise, there'd be no hope for anybody. If you say Mishra Bhakti, means there's no hope, so there's no hope for anybody. So why are we preaching? You know, we're preaching anyway. There's so many stories about how Karma Mishra Bhakti or Jnana Mishra Bhakti made people pure devotees, eventually. I mean, even you have the four Kumaras who were engaged in Jnana Mishra Bhakti. And eventually, when they smell the flowers and tulsi leaves offered at the lotus feet of the Lord, they became pure devotees, right? They were Jnana Mishra Bhaktas. Definitely Jnana Mishra Bhaktas. They weren't Shuddha Bhaktas in the beginning. And there's so many stories like that. Okay, any other questions?
Yes, Gurudev.
We have two people.
Hare Krishna.
Oh, we got Acharya. Okay, Acharya.
Yes, please. I wanted to ask a question about Gadadhar Pandit taking initiation from Pundarik Vidyanidhi.
Yeah.
It seems that he felt that he offended him by thinking that he was an enjoyer. And then he thought that the only measure to take to counteract the offense was to take initiation. Is there some particular lesson that we need to learn from this? We need to take initiation, but maybe we need
to... doesn't mean that we take initiation from everybody we offend. We'd be taking initiation many, many times if that was the case. No, in this particular case, it was not only because he had offended, but he realized that here was the topmost devotee of the Lord. I mean, you really have to unpack that whole story. That here, he had finally seen someone who was... because he was exhibiting the symptoms of Vyabhachari Bhava, simply by hearing. And also... let me unpack the story. So Mukunda Dutt actually explained to Gadadhar Pandit who Pundarik Vidyanidhi was. And so there, you know, there's a lot more background stuff that we don't read about. You know, if we just read the story, it appears like, oh, you know, he felt he committed offense. Okay, initiation. It's a lot more behind the story that's not told. You have to really unpack it. A little bit more, and I'm sure that there was a lot more going on. Well, there's a Govardhan Srila looking at me. Oh my God, Govardhan's attending my class. Oh my God, now I'm embarrassed. Leela Shakti put her Govardhan Srila right in front of her camera. It's really interesting. That's it. Best looking devotee I've ever seen. So Govardhan is the best devotee. Okay, so don't worry about it. But yes, we have to rectify. If we've committed an offense, there has to be some rectification. Serve the person you've committed an offense to or thought you've committed an offense to. Rectify your consciousness. We should never think negatively. You could, I mean, what to speak of offending a Vaishnava, you can offend even an ant, another living entity. We have to be very careful not to offend anybody, except for a demon. We can offend a demon. We don't offend a demon by fighting with them. We offend a demon by defeating them or going away or doing something similar. Okay, any other questions? I think Jayanti had a question. No? Jayanti.
Haribol?
Serbia.
Haribol. Do you hear? Hare Krishna, do you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. I want to thank you for everything, for this stream and this. I want to tell you obeisances and pranam of my husband, and he's in work now, and he wanted I show you before 2 days he made you Vyasa-san. And he say you must come to sit in your Vyasa-san.
That's funny.
Thank you very much. I hope we can enjoy in this stream many times with you. This is very, very big inspiration for us. And other devotees give you pranam and dandavat. Sashi Mukhi.
Ah, very nice.
She thinks about you. She's okay. And she say hello to you. Thank you very much. And see you later.
Thank you. So one thing is tomorrow we'll also have class. That'll be the last class for this week. And I think even after this whole lockdown is finished, and if life ever gets back to normal, if and when.
If.
Then I'm going to continue doing classes on Zoom.
Okay.
You know, even when I'm giving class in the temple, I'll be continued. Zoom will be every day. It's been, you know, it's a new addition to my life because I like interacting.
Very okay to us.
Yeah, it's very nice to see the devotees.
Yes. Thank you.
Very nice to see the devotees. And also it's encouraging because if I have to sit in the temple room sometimes, there's only 3 devotees. It's kind of, oh my God, what am I doing here? So it's better to see. Right now we have 26 devotees online here, and probably a lot more in Facebook. So this is very encouraging for me.
Yes, also to us, you know. And Dananja said to me tell you come in Serbia if we have a camp this year. I don't know.
I will come if there's a camp and if we can travel.
Yes.
We will see what Krishna wants. All right. So anyone else
okay,
ask a question?
Thank you, Hare Krishna.
Haribol. Lalita Sundari from okay. Slovenia.
Gurudev, this is more connected to previous classes that we had, but my question is, when will we be aware of our minority dependency on Krishna? Like, we discussed this, that now because of this present situation, we could at least think about this a little bit. And so how to like stay aware of this when this finishes? So when Krishna maybe takes something, and then when he gives back, then we might think, I mean, I'm talking for myself, like, okay, I've done some austerity, now this is the result, so I'm great, or something like that. So how to not, like, get this mentality? So to be aware that still this is, to give the credits to Krishna. And the next thing is... is it good to reflect, so according to the result, if we've done the right thing, but still not think that then we are the ones who've done it, who are
okay.
Okay.
That's your quota, two questions. So the first question is how not to become complacent. Complacent is the word I think you were looking for. That later on when things let up and the world's become a beautiful place again. The world is a beautiful place because everything is being arranged by Krishna. I mean, actually, we have to see the beauty. Sorry about this. We have to see the beauty in the coronavirus. This is all Krishna. One who sees Krishna everywhere and sees everything in Krishna is never lost to him. So there's actually beauty in everything. I mean, not only the things that are just like the nice sunset or the nice prasadam or something like that, but everything has a meaning and a purpose in this world. So the question is how to, but of course right now we are not on that level. Right now we are on the level of, oh, we're doing austerity and we're being forced to do austerity and we're trapped here. Oh my God, I don't know how much longer I can go on in life like this. I have to take shelter of Krishna. There's no alternative. The nightclubs are closed. I can't go to the discos anymore. I can't go to the karaoke club anymore. Actually, you can do online karaoke. But, you can get an app on your phone where you can do that. So, then all of a sudden, things open up. Haribo! Now I can go back to being my normal nonsense self. So, how not to become complacent when there's no misery is the question. I mean, I don't find this so miserable, but anyway, for many people it's miserable and it's austerity. So how not, by hearing regularly, one has to hear regularly about the temporary nature of this world. I mean, I know it's a little negative, but we really need to hear about the nature of this world continually and be reminded. And unless we're reminded, we tend to forget. That's the nature of the conditioned soul. So that's the first question. How not to think you're the doer is the second question. Well, I think there's two ways. When you hear again, hear from Krishna. Another way is you keep doing and then you see that Krishna takes the ability away from you sometimes. You know, sometimes you're very proud, you know, I can do this, I can do that. And then Krishna sort of pulls the rug out from underneath you. And you just, oh my God, I can't do anything. And so Krishna, either by experience or by hearing. Sometimes it takes years and years of experience. It's probably taken me about 50 years of experience to learn that I'm not the doer. You're still young. You still got another 40 years before you can learn it. So, so it takes some experience. You know, there's like old age. Old age is actually good because it teaches you a lot of things. That you're not in control anymore. Actually, getting old is like being on lockdown 24 hours a day. Definitely teaches you can't control. There's a lot of things I'd like to control I can't control. So, does that answer the question? Experience.
Experience. Can I just ask?
Yeah, just ask another question.
Yeah, you said that we have to hear about the nature of this world. My question is it... Okay, maybe this is a very open question and it depends, but like on the lectures, we can notice that some people, I mean, some preachers are focused on pointing out the bad sides of this world. And some are like more trying to share the power of bhakti process or something like this.
Yeah.
So what is more important, or is it important that both is there, or is there some ratio?
Ratio?
I mean,
yeah, you have to have both.
No.
I think you have to have both. You know, that's how Prabhupada preached. I mean, if you read Prabhupada's books, he mixes it with both. So you have to have a reminder about this world. Of course, again, if you're actually dealing with this world, not just in a little ISKCON bubble, you know, sometimes we just, like, you know, we have our ISKCON bubble and we looking outside, looking from inside outside, we don't really see the nature of this world. But if you're a normal person and interacting with people on a normal basis, I'm not saying devotees aren't normal, sorry about that, but if we're not in a cult means it's a very enclosed organization where you're just associating with each other and you're in denial of reality. So in any organization, not just ISKCON, you tend to have this cult-like mentality. So we're meant, in other words, we shouldn't be seeing people who are not members of ISKCON, people who are not devotees, as just like, let's say, animals in a zoo or something like that, or monsters or something. We're all in it together. We're all brothers and sisters, and, you know, this life is, you know, we're just fortunate. I'm just fortunate enough to have gotten Srila Prabhupada's association. So we shouldn't differentiate, in other words, between ourselves and others. We should see that we're part of this larger world. And when we see that and we're interacting with others, we will actually directly see the nature of this world. What do I mean? For example, if you're aware of what's happening in the world in different places, not only in our little, you know, Slovenian bubble, where, you know, everything, Slovenia, everybody's like young and wonderful and happy and whatever. And you look at the rest of the world, there's so many people, the majority of the people in the world are suffering. They don't have enough water. People are dying all the time. I mean, you don't even need to have a class on the miseries of this world unless you're just like locked up in the temple all the time and you never read the news and you never associate with someone other than someone who has tilak on their foreheads. You know, just like complete denial of reality. Isn't it? When you're actually out in the world, like a normal person, then you actually perceive the miseries. You know, whether it's reading the news, whether you know. I mean, for example, I hear about family members or people I know who are dying just about every day. I mean, even in my situation, I mean, the day before yesterday, one of my disciples passed away. You know, I get these notices all the time that, you know, this devotee who you knew or this disciple has passed away. You know, so that's life, and you learn about these things. I mean, it's not just the coronavirus. So I don't think, you know, on the other hand, just thinking about it, we don't need to remind people that much about the miseries of the material world. The world itself reminds them. Isn't it? I mean, if you're a doctor, like we got Nalini Kant there, who's like Dr. Jekyll. You know, anyway, he's laughing. He's a doctor. I mean, he's reminded, because he's in the world, he's seeing every day. You know, you're walking through the streets of Vrindavan, like Chaitanya Vallabha. He's in Vrindavan or Braj somewhere. And you go out and you see that the cows are suffering, the people there. I mean, if you just like look and be a little compassionate, you can't avoid seeing it. You look in people's eyes. I mean, I just go out in the street on a normal day, you know, not coronavirus, and just look at people's eyes. They're in anxiety. They're suffering. And so that reminds me of the nature of this world. And not only reminds me of the nature of the world, it reminds me of my duty in trying to help alleviate that suffering. You know, you see someone's house is on fire, and of course that's the material energy. Then if you just stand by, I mean, sometimes people just stand by and watch someone's house burn down and the people burn down inside the house. I mean, that's very heartless. We have to just be impelled. We have to see how people are suffering and try to help them. At the same time, Vishram Purna Shukayate, the whole material world is actually blissful because it has a purpose. There's a reason for the suffering. But, you know, there's two angles of vision. Okay, any other quick questions? Actually, it's time for prasadam, which is why I joined the Hare Krishna movement. So, you know, just, I got to get on with my real life now, which is eating. So, any of the quick questions? Rishesri is trapped in India. Oh my God, poor lady. You can't get out of India. Too bad. And anyway, it sounds like everybody's happy, and see, you're looking at everybody here. So, if there's no other questions, where's Mathura? Asasaki, where's Mathura? Oh, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Gurudev.
Where's Mathura?
You hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Oh, Mathura is doing, he's studying.
Oh, he's studying online.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Anyway, it's good to see everybody. We'll see everybody tomorrow. Tomorrow we'll have normal Bhagavatam class about the Kaliya serpent again. Oh, my God. Classes go so long when we do it online. That's a problem. Anyway, normally I like to keep classes, as Leela Avatar, I like to keep classes to 35 minutes like Prabhupada did. But online it presents a problem. Okay, so on that happy note, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. Hari Bhava.
Srila Prabhupada.